It's episode 24 of Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast. Let's go! And I was absolutely buzzing to sit down with Ian Page, the group executive chef at Sodexo Live and Craft Guild of Chefs' young chef ambassador, whose career has taken him from RAF kitchens and military deployments to Royal Ascot, a Chelsea flower show, global aviation catering and some of the biggest events on the planet. We chat about the adrenaline of major events, building kitchens from scratch and marquees, feeding thousands under pressure and why hospitality still offers some of the greatest opportunities anywhere. There's so much energy and gold in this one, so make sure you hit that subscribe button and come right on in. Hello and welcome to Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast, as ever hosted by me, Phil Street. Really excited to have today's guest on, something we've not really covered within the world of culinary. I'm not going to talk anything more about that. I'm going to let him do all of the talking from that perspective. Delighted to welcome to the show Ian Page.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good. Where do we find you today?
Well, I'm currently working from home today to make sure we can do this. I normally work. The internet's pretty bad, so when we try and do calls like this, we try and do it away from there. But yeah.
Right. Very good. Yes. Well, and we've been trying to do this for a while now, haven't we? As well. But life, I think, is just the key metric there.
Yeah, life over the last 3 months, I think we've been missing each other with work, traveling. Everything else has been going on. Yeah, it's been a crazy beginning of the year, really. It's I can't believe it's May already.
Right? It's madness, isn't it? Like, yeah. This is a third of the way through the year.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's not like anything's really majorly happened this year in the world. It's just been a really quiet year, hasn't it?
God. It's a very chilled out year, with everything that's been going on. It's in some parts of the world, it's gone a bit crazy, and it's affecting work massively at the minute. It's affecting cost of food prices. Travel is restricted. It's been pretty tough.
Yeah.
Since February. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if, like, just for 1 year, the world leaders just got together and go, should we give everybody a year off? Like, let's keep everything as it is for a year, so everybody can just kind of get on with their life a little bit, rather than having to respond to the mass crisis that just seems to be the state of the world in this decade.
You'd say that, but I think the culinary world would be pretty boring then, wouldn't it? You know, we have Brexit, where everything became 15 times the cost, and we couldn't get it, and then that mellowed out. Then we had COVID, which destroyed everything else, and then that mellowed out. Then we've had stuff that's gone on in the Middle East, and yeah. So I think it'd be pretty boring if everybody just got on.
I mean, that's a very positive outlook on life. I'm gonna take that with me. Somebody said to me in the middle of COVID, actually, which was something I just had not thought about. They just said, "What a time to be alive!" Like, because it's just whatever happens in moments where we fight. It just seems that this industry has been in a period of toughness for a few years. There's always mass learning, right? I mean, we always take some massive learning from whatever we're going through.
Yeah, I think so. I look back at COVID. I had a great 6 months of COVID. I had a great period. You know, we were redeployed from all the major events shut down. So Chelsea Flower Show, Royal Ascot, everything just ended overnight. And then we all got redeployed, and I ended up at a COVID testing site, working 4 days on, 4 days off, making test kits. My brother got made redundant, so he came to work with us. And it was the most I've seen him since we were kids. Yeah, it was brilliant. I rode my bike every day. It was 20 miles to Portsmouth from where I live, set up. It was like great. And the kids, the family life, you would have 4 days off, and although you couldn't go anywhere, we did stuff, and you got quite creative with a 5 and a 4-year-old at home. And when we did school learning, I realized how bad at school I was, when I'm struggling with kids' maths. But yeah, it was we had a great time. I think it's kids got into cooking. Now they really nice. Started to learn how to make. Obviously, everybody made sourdough, right? That was the
that's right banana bread.
It's a bit like the 90s. If you remember the 90s, you weren't there. If you remember making, if you didn't make sourdough during COVID, you didn't have anything to do with COVID. So I think everybody jumped on that, and we did all that sort of good stuff. It was a great time. But yeah, obviously it was really bad for a lot of other people, but on a personal point, it didn't affect us. We were in our own little house, our own little world, and it just tipped over, and we worked, you know.
Yeah. So, crack on, chef, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was just get your head down and get it done.
Yeah.
And then we came out of COVID, and then I still hear comments now. People still blaming COVID, which does annoy me. You know, they're struggling to find chefs because of COVID. As I come on, that was 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. It's one of my analogies I said to people is if you had a bad service last week, you're not going to blame last week's service on this week's. So why are you still blaming COVID on not being able to train and get chefs in the kitchens?
Yeah. And to be fair,
it does wind me up when I hear that.
Yeah. And since I've been in the workforce, which is 20 plus years now, we've spoken about how difficult it is to find chefs. Like, mm-hmm. The difficulty has probably gone up and down a little bit over that time period. But it is, at the same time, it's just been... It's a constant battle for the industry, and we just got to accept that there's probably things that we could do better, and keep trying to get better at that, and then maybe one day we'll stop talking about how troublesome it is to find chefs.
Well, yeah, and that's a big part of what I do with the Guild as Young Chef Ambassador is, I'm at the colleges, I'm with the students, I'm looking for young chefs. And I'm working hard with the colleges to nurture. There's going to be chefs that go to college who are always going to be chefs, no matter what. They are going to go to college. They wanted to go to college to be a chef. They want to do the extra work. I was at Eastleigh College just yesterday. There's a young chef there. She entered a competition for us last year. She, off her own back, phoned up the Michelin star chef who did the competition with us and got herself a day's stage up at his restaurant, which is amazing.
Brilliant, yeah.
So they're out there. The chefs are out there who want to be chefs. So I'm not worried about them because they're the ones who are going to push themselves to get where they want to go, And it's the ones who are at college because they've got to go to college, because they're being sent to college, that do they want to be a chef? They don't know, but they're going there anyway. So they're the ones I'm really pushing to capture their imagination that there's more out there than trying to hit MasterChef, trying to hit the TV, the restaurants, the hotels. A bit like Premiership footballers, right? Only 1% are ever going to make it, right? So only a certain amount of chefs are ever going to end up, I feel, are only ever going to end up in the top tier restaurants, hotels. It's the rest of the industry that we need food creators and chefs, whether it's nursing homes, hospitals, schools, colleges, all the other industries, military, prisons, we still need chefs for that.
Yeah.
So if every student who went to college went to Michelin star restaurants and hotels and all the good places, no one out, where's the rest? So they're the ones we need to train. And when I go into the colleges, I did some stuff with pizza work yesterday. That's just as vital as a fine dining dish, because more people are probably going to eat a pizza than they are going to eat a fine dining dish.
It's probably more vital.
Exactly. So whether it's a pizza, a burger, a potato, there's so much that we can show these chefs or young people that what's potential out there. And there's also a great life skill. It's a great life skill as well. It's I help out with the local scout group as well, and I judge their bangers and mash competition every year.
Nice.
It's amazing. I've never seen so many varieties of mashed potatoes.
That's awesome. Amazing. I love that.
And they got the sausages, and they had these big, 40 litre saucepans filled with water that they put four potatoes in the bottom. And they're all left to their own, these 11 to 13 year olds. And they're all left to their own. And they cooked the sausages, then they thought about putting the potatoes on. But it was a life skill that then they, when we showed them how to do it properly the following week, I went in there and they were like, that makes sense. So, but these kids, again, it's whether it's they're going to end up in industry, it's just a life skill to be able to cook for yourself. And it's so mainstream now, right? It's so Instagram and TikTok. There's people cooking all the time as well.
I still think it's the best investment in yourself you can make. Like, whether you go on to become a professional chef or not, the ability to cook nutritious, wholesome food is one of the best gifts you can give your body, yourself, your mind. Notwithstanding, when you fully understand, how to reduce food waste in your own house, and you're saving money, and that, actually, if you're putting food in the bin, that's basically a pound note. God, I'm aging myself there, aren't I? That's how I learned. Somebody said to me, you're sweeping that into the bin. That's a pound note going in there. It's like that. Yeah, well, it's probably £10 notes these days.
You still have pound notes in Scotland, right, though, don't you?
I have no idea. I don't live there anymore, so it's illegal tender down here, isn't it, in some places. But in any case, we've kind of just jumped straight into this. Really, really fascinated to talk about your involvement with the Guild on the Young Ambassador Programme. But we haven't even told the world what you do.
Oh, so, yeah. I currently work for Sodexo Live as a group executive chef looking after one of our aviation contracts. So I've been in that now for 2 years, 2 years this week, actually, or 2 years last week. So, yeah, great 2 years. Really interesting account, interesting job, actually. I never realized how busy aviation was. I always worked in major events and the sporting event world. And coming into aviation, it's an eye opener. We feed 1,300 passengers a day, every single day in an airport in one lounge. And I look after four lounges or four clubhouses in the USA and one in Johannesburg as well.
Right.
So we have a great footfall of passengers coming through, great food concepts, great styles. Yes, I've been doing that. It's really opened my eyes up. I'm really privileged I get to travel, which is something I love. I love doing. I love the demographics of the guys that I work with globally. They've all got something to bring to the business, whether it's the wash-up guy or the chef. You know, everybody's got something to offer. They've all got great dynamics of food from their cultures. So it's really interesting, on that, especially like going down to Johannesburg and understanding, the foods that they like to eat and all that, and then going to California, which is great, and the Mexican concepts. I've now apparently officially eaten the best Mexican food outside of Mexico, apparently, last time I was there by one of the chefs.
Right.
And they made it at home and brought it in for me to try it, because they just want me to taste it and have the food. So it was really good. So yeah, 2 years been doing that, which is, wow, it's gone by.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a wonderful byproduct. What you just said there around that, when you get to travel for the work that you do, but also like the people that you're put into contact with who have a passion for food from their point of origin, and those are the sorts of, like, people want you to try their food, right? That's probably one of the reasons why you want to become a chef in the first place, is that you just want to deliver a nice food experience for people.
Yeah, and when I'm sat there, you're hearing them telling me, you should eat this, you should have that, you should try this. And then they start arguing about them amongst themselves that theirs is a better idea than the other person. It's the same as the bar guys, bartenders, when they start saying that their margarita is better than their colleague's margarita, and they have a margarita off, to like prove it. It's something that we have here, but it's very, when you start speaking to the chefs over there or the workers over there, they're really passionate. When I'm in on the East Coast, like New York, we have some chefs from Dominican Republic and around there in the Caribbean, and they're trying to bring their food into the business. And we have a chef from Colombia who introduced us to Arepa, which is amazing. So it's really, really fun and like great like that to try different foods, and I'm very privileged to be in that position as well.
Nice, yeah.
I make the Yorkshire pudding for them as well, and they love a Yorkshire pudding.
I mean, wouldn't love a Yorkshire pudding?
Exactly. It's especially when you make it, they're like, that's a pancake. I was like, hold on.
Give it a minute. Yeah, what I love about that as well is that you're almost a case in point for the point you made earlier on in the conversation about all of the different avenues that exist as a chef, and to end up being involved in aviation, in amongst all of the other things that you've done, which we will no doubt discuss very shortly. But it's a really, we need food to live, right? So there's so many ways and means around the world beyond your own house where you have to be fed.
Yeah.
The opportunity, that's something that AI is not going to take over either, no. By the way. So I still maintain that we are currently dealing with the future premium jobs. That's my contention.
Yeah, I don't think I haven't really thought about what AI can do yet. It's on our side of things. Yes, it's got the technology behind with the AI doing for customer footfall and thoughts and processes and all that. But on a culinary perspective, yeah, I think we're still going to have people cooking. You're never going to get a machine to tell you if it tastes right. And I think that personal side of it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you look at like my kids who are secondary school, you know, they're going to be in jobs that don't exist right now, eventually.
Yeah.
Which is quite scary to think. And I'm doing a job probably that didn't exist 30 years ago, you know. So it's quite scary to think that. But also, yeah, these other ones who have just come out of university and now struggling for work because AI's taken over it. But I don't think too much about that.
Well, but also we've got so many entry level jobs that AI, certainly in its current form, and probably, you know, we're years and years and years away before we could consider a takeover of the world by robots, if that is the end game of this. Who knows? I'm quite an optimist. I haven't really gone to the Terminator end game yet with where this all goes, but a lot of the entry level jobs whereby you just want to get out and work and just experience life a little bit happen through hospitality in some form, whether that's front or back of house. And that's not going to change anytime soon. No, so you just have to get people who can see that as a big benefit, because whatever you do with it, as you said, with the culinary skill, life skills are taught in these environments, you know, the skills that you can take with you into anything that you do, not just necessarily within the world of hospitality.
I think it's an important thing to learn young. I think the kids as well, the younger people now, they've got access. Everybody's got access now, right? So we didn't have access when we were growing up. And I think, you know, if you wanted access, you had to record it and then wait the following month or wait for the magazine to come out. But I think now they can just go on there, you know. I'd see it with my two. They turn the tablet on. She wants to make a cake. She finds it. She watches it. She goes in the kitchen and makes it. So access is there from a very young age for any life skill, really, but especially when it comes to cooking. And there's nothing better, I think, when you see a kid or a student or anybody make something and then are really proud of themselves for doing it. It's like when we did the competition yesterday, the pizzas, they made the pizzas and they were brilliant. They loved it. And it was an on the day competition as well. So they knew it was happening, but the mystery bag and the ingredients they found out then, and watching their personalities come out, 16 students, 16 pizzas. That was hard work, tasting 16 pizzas and 16 sides as well.
That's a test of the middle-aged midriff. That's what
that is. Yeah, it was definitely a carb overload day yesterday. But you can just see how much they enjoyed that freedom of, here's some product, here's a pizza, everybody knows a pizza, here's a product, and let's put it on a plate and make something great from it.
Yeah, very good. Right, before we kind of carry on, what I'd love to do actually is just take you all the way back to the beginning. How did you get into the industry in the first place?
So I wanted to be in the Air Force.
Okay.
So I've always wanted to be, I was always wanted to be in the Royal Air Force. So I
wasn't driven by watching Top Gun as a kid, was it?
That was actually, funny enough, that was 40 years ago today on the radio.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted to be the guy who had the fly the helicopter. I never wanted to be a jet pilot. I always wanted to be a helicopter pilot. Then I got told that I had a bad eye, so I thought I'd be a chef. I don't really know. My grandparents, my nan, she cooked a lot. My mama cooked a lot. So I wanted to get into, I like cooking. And I went to college for a bit, and I still wanted to be in the Air Force. So I sat down with my parents. I was like, I'm going to join the Air Force. So off I went at 17. I left in 2004. So it was like 9 years, something like that. And then I left there, and the only reason I left is I came home from Kuwait, and one of my mates, he came over and said, we're working at Ascot next week. Do you want to come? I was like, what are we doing? He's like, oh, we're going to go and work in Ascot. We're working for an agency. I was like, okay, then. And that was it. I saw a massively different world. So I went to Royal Ascot in like 2004, 2005. And then I decided then, yeah, I was going to leave the Air Force and go off and start working as a freelance chef. So I did that until 2010.
Right. So in the Air Force, you were chefing?
I was a chef in the Air Force, yep.
Yeah. So talk to me about, because I'm guessing there's like perceptions around what being a forces of any kind, you know, what I guess the key thing is that if you're cooking for the mainstream, you're cooking for functionality rather than, you know, beautifully created food. But also there is, like, there's the officers and things like that, right, that have, like, dinners and things.
So I was, my first posting was to RAF Lucas, and I had no idea where that was. I remember getting called in the office and said, here's your posting page, you're off to RAF Lucas. And I looked at my warrant officer and I'm like, where's that? And he's like, it's Scotland. And I'm like, I don't have a car. So I had to, you know, I had to get a car and drive to Scotland with no sat nav and an A to Z, and I got lost all the way up there. But I got to RAF Lucas, and I was in the they called it the Airman's Mess in them days, junior ranks mess. So that was anything below a sergeant. And then it was food, you know, we'd have, you know, curry, shepherd's pies, everything, like big bulk food like that. Then I got posted down to RAF Odium near Basingstoke. And that's when really when my Air Force career really took off. Went down there and we had the junior ranks mess, and I went in there. Then I went into the sergeant's mess, which was great. Then I got into the officer's mess, and that was different style of food. Again, you had a budget as such, but you had the living in officers. And then I started working for the station commander in his house, doing the VIP work there. And it was really good. And between that, then you'd go off and do deployments. So I went to Kuwait a couple of times. I went over and spent quite a lot of time in the Middle East, in different areas of the Middle East, and then went to the Falklands a few times. Again, that was different. You know, it's going, what's it, right the way down the bottom of the planet. And
yeah, it's properly disconnected as well, right? I mean, it's definitely an isolated island.
It definitely is. It's a holiday destination now, I believe. Mm. They do cruise ships there now. But yeah, I went down there. That was my last tour, I think, 2004 was down there. I went, made sure I saw the penguins and the sea lions and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, I spent probably over a year in deserted areas, I'd say. So, and when I left, I had a great time. I got some great mates that we still keep in contact with. You might not see them for a couple of years. I bump into one every year at the Craft Guild Awards. You know, that's probably our catch up every year, 20 minutes at the bar. And yeah, and then, but we still keep in contact, the guys from there, which is good. And I think, you know, it's true. You make friends for life when you're in a military organization. It was good.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was the Air Force. And I came out of there and looked at contract catering, sports events, worked all pretty much most of the sporting events that we do in the UK once or twice. It was a good fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But also, like, again, you've just kind of, you've reinforced your earlier point there about the joy of being able to travel and see a little bit of something else. And also even the way you described the role there within your role at the RAF base. Well, I mean, a big cross-section of experience, which, one, I suppose, helps you with volume, but two, helps you with precision and intimate dining settings as well.
Yeah, yeah, we did a lot of, what we were classed as fine dining back in early 2000s is very different than what we class as fine dining now.
Right, yeah.
And very different when you take, we were still doing silver service back in the officer's mess, and, you know, everything was still put on a silver platter and the stewards would take it out and silver serve it down to the officers. Well, I doubt they do that now, but that was a thing then. It was great. But yeah, you know, you could be in a field under a tent, peeling potatoes and cooking for 1,000 troops, maybe down at Salisbury Plain on a field exercise, or you could be in the station commander's house cooking for, we'd have like the mayor of Basingstoke and whatever like that coming in. So it's very different. That could be like for five people. So very different from one end to the other.
Yeah.
And I think that's set me up for the rest of my career, from doing large numbers to small numbers. It just builds that foundation.
Yeah. But and that's also, that's a sporting environment as well, right? You've got volume catering, but you've also got private, more intimate spaces as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when you take a sports event that's, you know, the Open or the Golf or something like that, yeah, you would have the very, very high end, you know, money can't buy a ticket dining, down to fish and chips for 20,000 a day, 30,000 a day. So it's a massive broad spectrum of everything you do. And you need to be, for big events, you need to have an idea of everything as opposed to specialize in one thing. You'd notice that when some of our casual chefs would come in who work very fine dining, and they all of a sudden fall out of their comfort zone. So you need to look up, put them back into their comfort zone. So you quickly move chefs around during an event to get the best out of them as well.
Yeah, to have the right people in the right places, I guess. Because, yeah. I mean, you don't, my perception is in an environment like that, you don't really have a lot of time to respond. You've got to be pretty quick in the moment and act to get stuff done.
Well, yeah, a lot of the events, you know, you take the golf, it's only 4 days. 4 days of actual tournament, probably three more days. So you're only there, most of the guys are only there for 7 to 8 days. So by the time you realise, it's probably too late. So you need to have a good understanding of who you're bringing in, where they're going. And on the circuit, I think it's called the freelance circuit, everybody knows everybody anyway. So you bring most of the people in, you build your senior positions there, and then you backfill with junior chefs or agency chefs or the unknowns. Then you backfill from there, and eventually those guys that do 2 or 3 years, they start moving up the ranks as such, you know. And I'm a big believer is you should always try and promote from within, whether it's a big massive contract event like that or a small unit that you're doing elsewhere. It's better who you know, right? So
every time.
You can train and spend time on them and invest.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did your career progress from there? We're kind of through the noughties into what do they call it? 2010s. Is it just the 2010s?
Can't be the 2010s. I'm a bit wrong, isn't it? So I think 2010. I took my first head chef job in Bournemouth International Centre. I wanted to not travel around, but. We just bought a house and we were both, me and my partner, she was working on events as well. And then I thought, you know, I think it's time that I found somewhere that I can start. Yeah. So I spent 5 years at Bournemouth International Centre. It was great. It's very, very large scale, like any conference centre. It's not the biggest conference centre, but it was big enough for me at the time. You know, so we would do big, you'd have concerts down there. You would have massive like government events. We'd have the government parties down there. Conservative Party down there was 1 year, you know, so we'd have them come in. We'd have big NHS events down there, so it was high volume, low spend, and they wanted the world for nothing, which you can understand.
So
it would be a lot of buffets, that sort of work. We'd do a lot of large number of dinners. There was a massive hall there, so we could do 1,000 cover dinners, and that was really my first time. Obviously I've done big numbers before that, but actually running the numbers, running the event. So there was some eye openers there. Yeah, so 5 years there, I had a couple of great sous chefs who I'm still good friends with now, who we've all moved on. So yeah, it was nice driving into Bournemouth, you know, driving down there every day. In the winter it was a little bit abysmal when the sea's like horrible, but in the summer it was great, you know. You're just driving down there towards the beach every day and you park up around the back of the BIC, and yeah, it was we had some good memories down there. It's some good times down there.
Nice part of the world for sure. Yeah. And how did it progress from there? How did your career progress?
I went to JP Morgan in Bournemouth. That was a large tech hub. I went there as executive chef. What was that, 2015 to 2017, something like that. So I did 2 years there. They had a massive project undertaken there of a redevelopment of the main concourse area. So it was good. I was working with the exec chef up in London, who was very experienced. And we pushed through there and mentored me through how we do. I've never done a redevelopment of a site before. So that was brand new to me. And I really enjoyed that. It's having the client's budget and we were allowed to spend it was very new to me. So, and it was like, if the client gave you, I think it was like $100 million refurb across the whole campus.
Wow.
And the catering got a massive part of that because, you know, it wasn't subsidized, but it was obviously a big tech world view. You know, everybody knows what like Google and Facebook and all those big tech companies are doing in the UK and America. And they, JP Morgan, they were doing it in London. It was time to do it in Bournemouth. So the concepts that we put down there ended up rolling out to other parts of their business as well, which was really exciting. So we'd have a lot of senior people coming in from America a lot to have a look around what we were doing. So we did that. So I think we spent most of the money on the concourse, then they were doing the main kitchen, which then it was like done what was left over. But again, it was a great concept that we had there and all the different food styles. And it made you quite jealous that you didn't work there as a customer, right? Because we were doing the food there, and the we had a Josper grill in there. We had one of them fitted, which was amazing. When I suggested it, and they were like, the client's like, that sounds a great idea. I was like, wow.
Easy as that.
I know. So we bought a Josper. Yeah. We're just cooking burgers in it, but we had a Josper. It was like the best thing ever. And we had all the whole kitchen got refurbed with induction, which was like, again, new for me. To have all this new technology in a contract catering environment. But the food concepts are good. We were changing the menus daily. We had a great team there. We had the downstairs in the main hall. We had like a chopped salad bar, which was really, really cool. We had a deli bar. So it was just really, really on point. And then I did that for 2 years. And then once we completed the refurbishment, everything just ticked along really nicely. There was no more money to do anything else. So from the client, they'd done it. There was like job done.
Yeah.
And then I was concerned then that it would just be really plateau out. So stagnant. Myself, I saw where I wanted to go in my career then. So it was time to move on. So I left there. I did a little bit of consultancy work with Korean Aramark. So I was, when I was at JP Morgan, it was actually Aramark who were the contractor there. So I did some work with Korean Aramark. They just took over the military contract. So I spent 4 months with them helping with the new contract. And then I joined Sodexo at the time as Major Events, which is a job that I always wanted. So, which was, and then that was, I feel that's really when the next part of my career then took off. I took a 2 year hiatus. I went and worked for Levy for 2 years. So again, just after COVID, so 22. I think my dates now. What year are we in now? 26. 24. Yeah, so 22. I went to Levy and did major events with Levy, and then went to Sodexo Live. That's Sodexo Live for the aviation.
Yeah, what was it about the your face smiled when you said, and that's when I got into major events. What is it about that world that that really ignites you?
I love the Greenfield event. I always loved doing that when I was freelance. Some of my mentor chefs had that job. So some of the chefs I really looked up to during my noughties career, as you'd say, had that head chef major events Sodexo job. And it was something that I always had on my, I want that job one day. So some very, still very good friends at it was something that I always wanted. I wanted to do Chelsea Flower Show. I wanted to do Henley Regatta. I wanted to do something to do with the Open. You know, I love golf and I wanted to be a part of that event as well somehow. So yeah, and I just always enjoyed, you know, you're in a marquee, here comes your deliveries. Build the kitchen from nothing. And that's what I always enjoyed. It's obviously, you don't enjoy it when it's like 38 degrees in a marquee and you're on the stoves and it's hot, but it was just something that I always loved doing. Yeah. So when the opportunity came up, I went down, had a meeting at Ascot about it. And then it was just a no brainer. It was like, yeah, I need to get that notch on my career that I do that sort of work. So the major events, so that four and a half years. So that was, yeah, Chelsea Flower Show, Henley Regatta. We did the Open, multiple events in between that. Royal Ascot. I enjoyed working at Royal Ascot. So I have one area there with the team that I can put in there. Yeah, it was just really, it was the Burley Horse Trials we used to do as well. We did some polo events. It was just great. And, you know, you got a blank piece of paper and you can almost build your menu, build your kitchen, build your style around what you want to do, and then order in volume. It's there's nothing better than when a lorry load of food turns up. If he's right, depends on the supplier. And yeah. You got all your chefs there, you know, 50, 60 chefs, 80 chefs to turn up. You do the event and then you close down and pack it up and then do the next one. It was just something that I always loved doing. It was great fun, and I'm so passionate about it now. It's even now, it's just something that you see the events on TV. Yeah, it's funny, like when you're watching Chelsea Flower Show, it's still, even now, I've not done it for years, but when you're watching it, it's like, and you see the marquees, and it's still a little bit like, you know, I wish I was there, you know. You're watching the golf, and you like, you see the marquees, and again, you're still thinking that, I wonder how many fish and chips I've done today, you know, and stuff like that.
But these are all internationally renowned events, right? And you know, so people come from all over the world to take part and enjoy whatever that is, whether it's the flower show or a golf or the Open or whatever. And actually, then if you think about like your role in that moment, nobody else in the world is getting to do this, right? It's kind of that's a really unique position to be in. Whether you're the exec chef there or whether you're a commie or a kitchen porter or whatever, nobody else in that moment that you're on day three at the Open doing catering for, you know, the masses and for the golfers and however that works, nobody else is getting to do that in at that precise moment. It's quite a magical thing.
It really is, and you know, it's I'd find out during, especially like Chelsea Flower, the hours you do, it didn't feel like you're doing 17-hour days at all. It didn't feel like that when you're on site at 4 a.m. and you're leaving at 11 at night or whatever, however many hours you do. You walk away on. I felt I was walking around on a high every day. It doesn't matter what happened in the morning, what happened in the afternoon. It was just a great feeling, and it's almost trying to find that high. You know, it's even now. It's like that. I don't know what the word is. Euphoric feeling of an event. Yeah, I don't know. It's it might sound a little bit cheesy, but it was just like you get that moment, something, and then you walk away from it, and then probably 3 months later you start thinking about it. You're doing like your debriefs. You know, that was pretty good though, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It's like, well, however bad that felt at the time, you know, you gotta think, however bad you're having something, someone's having the worst time right now. So it can't be the worst thing in the world right now. And so yeah, and then you think about it later on. And even now, it's like I catch up with chefs that I'm good friends with, and we've been through these events together, and we'll just talk about something that happened. Or do you remember that time that didn't turn up and we had to make do with that? And you just got to be really reactive as well. You know, it's, you know, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and a product doesn't turn up, or I don't know, something's gone down or something's gone wrong, you need to react quick enough to say, right, what are we going to do now then? Because all of a sudden you've got, you know, so many eyes looking at you, and you're like, you can't just go there going, I don't know, you need to react. And I think, and most chefs have to, I think every chef has to, don't they? In that position, it's something you can plan it on a piece of paper down to the second, but you know something's going to go wrong and you need to react and have a plan B, plan C, plan D, and get through it, and then walk away from it and then go, right, what went wrong last time? What can we make sure doesn't happen tomorrow or next time? But you know that something else is going to go wrong. Yeah. You've always got to have that in your head that something's going to go wrong, and you plan for the worst, don't you? And then you yeah, and you... Yeah, you call in favors. You have suppliers turning up on a Saturday morning at 7 o'clock because they've gone, something's been missed off, and they drive in with their kids in their car. One supplier used to have done that for me a couple of times on a Saturday morning because they didn't send something in. So we had to drive his kids to their warehouse, pick it up and drive it in. Yeah. But it was reaction, you know, and it's not just the chefs on the floor, it's the suppliers and the connections and the networking and communications and all that. Everybody pulls it together to make it happen.
I think that's an absolutely beautiful, beautiful thing. Like when that happens, like that scenario there that you just gave around, you know, a supplier coming in with their kids in the car type of thing, that nobody does that if they're not passionate about what they do. You know, you do that because you love what you do, and it matters and it makes a difference to something. And yeah. And when that happens in that kind, when you've got that kind of relationship with people, It's just a really spectacular, wonderful, wonderful place to be when it's like that.
Yeah, I believe I need the suppliers just as much as I need the chefs on the floor, because they can turn it on or turn it off, a supplier.
Yeah,
you know, quite easily. And I don't think I'm in a position with any supplier where I've had that issue. You know, it's, yes, we've had our conversations and in the moment conversations. At the end of the day, it's they're there to help me make it happen, Yeah, and I need their product, and they need me to use their product, and I need the chefs on the floor to make that product go to the customer. So it's a big circle, really. It's not just a load of chefs making it happen. There's so many hundreds of people behind the scenes somewhere doing something to make something happen. Yeah,
Yeah, it's magnificent,
that's why
is
I
what
love
it
about
is.
Greenfield events. It's yeah, and yeah, it was good fun.
And so how did the kind of the segue into aviation happen then? If because
So,
because the live event aspect seems to be something that really ignites you.
it does. So this is a funny story, actually. So we booked a holiday. So we've never gone on. We've since we've had children, 10 at the time. We've never done a foreign holiday. So we booked a foreign holiday. We're going to go to Egypt. And my wife said to me, "I'm like, surely you must know someone who can get us into a lounge before we fly out." I was like, "Surely you've got a contact." I was
Well,
like,
another
"Hold on."
wonderful byproduct of this industry, right? Is
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
contacts in
Yeah.
places of importance.
I sent a few texts out to people that I know that have connections or to do with aviation, and one person replied back to me as I, "Unfortunately, we don't fly out of Gatwick, but if you're ever coming through Heathrow, let me know." I was like, "Okay, I will do." And then half an hour later, he texted me saying, "What are you doing for work?" I was like, "Well, I'm all right. What have you got?" He's like, "Global exec chef," and I'm like, "Give me a call," and
Wow.
that was it. And so we had a conversation. I went up, met them, had a chat, told me about their vision and what his client's vision is, and I was like, "This sounds really exciting." And then I got flown over to New York to see one of the places over there, not one of the lounges over there. Spent literally we flew in at I think 9 o'clock at night on a Tuesday, stayed the Tuesday night. I spent the Wednesday in the lounge meeting people and seeing what they're doing, and flew home that night. So it was literally in and out. I didn't even see
Flying
anything of
visit,
New York. It
literally.
was the funny part is I then had my interview 38,000 feet over the Atlantic, landed, had breakfast, finalized the negotiation, and then about a week later we both agreed,
That's really
and that
cool.
was it.
I love
So
it.
the funny thing is now he just says, "Well, I got your lounge access, didn't I?" I was like, "Well, yeah, I've now got to work for you."
Yeah,
So
I
yeah,
know.
and that's how I got into it.
That's wicked. I love stories like that because the because that's what happens. That's it's just and also like you're for you to be kind of alert enough to the moment as well that that somebody has approached you about something and you say, well, look, I am guessing at part of what excites you as well as your ability to see that you can make the right kind of difference in a space as well and actually that your vision and their vision marry up. And as long as that happens, then good things can happen.
Yeah, I think I've done some bits for him before, or his contract before, when I was on Sodexo Major Events. So we crossed paths before, and it's yeah, when they talk to me about what they want to do and how they want to do it, and I like the fact it's not a destination restaurant, so it's a service, but a very, very high level service, and that's. It's a small account or small contract, but big at the same time. We've only got seven lounges, and six, seven lounges. So it was really exciting, and obviously with the travel, that adds to it as well. I think I say I'm very privileged and lucky to be able to go off places and work with other chefs around the world and understanding what they do, where they come from, and how they do things, and the food that we do is great food. It's understanding how quick we need to turn it around and not overcomplicating it. So a lot of a bit like event catering, it's yes, you can have like the fine dining aspect, but you still got to turn it around quick. At a sporting event, people, yes, they're there all day, but they're there to see the sport. They're not just there for the food. So you need to turn it around quickly. In the airport, it's the same. It's again, it's a great the 2 years I've just been there, I've literally flown by. It's
Very good to see what you did there.
and I totally enjoy what I do. It's a different style of work that I do now, so it's not as hands-on, but there's all the back work, the accounts, and all and understanding like US health and safety and food safety is just insane, because they do things differently. So I've had to learn, I put myself on certain courses to be able to understand US food safety, US health and safety. And over there, every state is different. Every state is almost a different country. You know, in one state, you've got 8 allergies, and another state is 9 allergies. Yeah, so it's and then Africa is different again. So it's really, really hard work understanding it, and supply chain, understanding that the US supply chain is different. So it just opens you up to really learning more about the industry in a global scale. And it's not as easy. Like in the UK, if I want a product to come down from a supplier in Scotland, it'd be there tomorrow or the next day. In America, if you want something from the East Coast, it's never going to get to the West Coast, you know, because you might as well just be in two different countries.
Yeah,
it's that different, which is a real eye-opener. So it took me a good year to understand that, and I still don't fully understand. I don't think I ever will. British to really understand it.
They'll probably change it. Like as soon as you get your head around it, somebody will say, "Oh, well, we're gonna." There's a new regulation there now, so you have to do X, Y, Z, because that's just what seems to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But yeah, so that's what I enjoy so much about this. It's the difference, the way things are different, and we're a small team again, and I quite like the fact that we're a small team. It's good. It's good.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, and how did your work with the Guild come about?
So maybe 5 years ago, I was speaking with Matt Owens, was the chair then, or it might just be before him. Yeah, it was definitely Matt Owens. And speaking to him about doing something on the Guild, a bit more with the Guild in some way. And then I was on the Young Chef Ambassador Subcommittee, which was great. So I sort of started to see into that. And then a chef called Amber, who was actually the Young Chef Ambassador at the time, and she took on a new job, I believe, and then had to step down from the Guild. So then I got voted on as the Young Chef Ambassador in 22. And it's great. Working with my peers, working with people that I really look up to as well in the Guild, you know, understanding that it's a great network, a great tool to use. There's a lot of experience there. And if you need something, you know, you can reach out to whether it's the chairman or anybody like that, and you can talk to them about things that you need or need help with and understanding. And then my main aim was really then is, you know, what can we do to sustain our industry with young chefs? You know, it's, we talk about sustainability in the industry all the time, and the first thing that always comes to people's mind is plastic, straws, beef. But actually, let's talk about sustainability. If we don't have young chefs, we don't have an industry.
Yeah.
So that's my view. That's my ethos on it. It's like, take away the straws, take away all that sort of stuff, but we need people to do the job. So, and that was really then as I started linking with the colleges and doing more work with them and creating like demo days and competitions just purely for students to get involved. So I would do work with Eat Wild. So we launched that. This is our third year this year on that competition. So we wanted to do something with wild meat. So a student-based or apprentice-based competition for wild meat, trying to use venison, trying to use pheasant, and using it in everyday cooking, not just fine dining. So when we launched the competition, it just came about from a good friend of mine who's into game a lot. It's Leon Charles Davis. He's actually on my subcommittee now, and we were just chatting one day, and I was like, wouldn't it be great if we did a wild meat competition or a game competition and we don't see a single venison Wellington? And he's like, yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? So right, so we launched it. We got Mark Kempson involved. He's a Michelin star chef at restaurant W8, so he's one of the patrons of this competition. He's given up a lot of his time, and the actual prize for the winner is a day's stage in his kitchen and dinner in his restaurant. So they get to, and during the game season as well. So yes. Which is an amazing prize. And he loves the young chefs as well, coming in and showing them more of what we can do with game. And then we did the competition the first year, which was brilliant. And then the second year, it just the standard was so good. And the brief on it is everyday cooking, but with game. So like this year, the brief is your favorite chicken dish, but using pheasant,
right?
Which is great. You know, I'm really excited to see what we can get there. And then a brunch dish. I think we specified venison, pheasant, Mallard or something like that. So I'm really excited to see what the young chefs can do. And we did that, and it's great. And then I work with Pizza C doing a young the Silver Slicer competition, which is for students, young chefs. And we did the Rising Star, which is what I did yesterday. And again, it's very, very young chef and student based, about showing them about pizzas and what you can do with a pizza and what side can go over pizza. So that's really good. And then we do, I've done a couple now, 2 years of like a student chef theatre. So we did it at Eastleigh College, and we've done it at North Hearts College, where we go in there for the day. I got a game chef to come in. We had Pizza C come in. I've had Claire Clark came in and done pastry work, done some sugar work demonstrations. So it's, again, just showing the students that, you know, what you can do and learning the skill. So when Claire came in, it was amazing. She came in and she says, I'm not going to show them a finished dessert. I'm going to show them a skill. So she did some sugar craft modeling and some sugar work. And it was really good. They all made little frogs and they loved it. You know, the students loved it and they took pictures of it. And, you know, they're quite young. They were like level one students. So some of them only finished school like 4 months earlier.
Right.
So, but it was just giving them that skill that they are able to then go home and show mum and dad.
Yeah.
Right. Because at that age, I think if you learn something, you know, and you can redo it at home, I think it's quite, it just shows that they're really into it. So yeah, so that's what we do. And you know, I've spent done four or five years now on that.
Superb, yeah. And the point you make there around, you know, the fact, taking it back to mum and dad, like you can then take mum and dad on the journey as well, right? Because that's probably half the battle here in terms of getting into their psyches around, actually, this could be a fantastic career for somebody, rather than, you know, them, you know, this is, I'm kind of just generalizing, but your mum and dad saying, oh no, you've got to go into medical or finance or whatever. Actually, if somebody's bringing home a passion and a skill, then that's a very different, probably a different conversation.
It really is. It really is. I think, you know, a lot of parents get hit up on, are they going to go to college? Are they going to go to university? Are they going to be a doctor and a lawyer? There's learning a skill and something that they enjoy, you know, it's, if they enjoy doing it, you know, it's, I said to them yesterday, if you enjoy it, you know, your customers will enjoy it, you know, and I think that's an important thing as well. It's, it just shows their personality at the same time then.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Look, brilliant. What a journey you've had. What a journey you've had so far. Just getting started.
Yeah. It's, I would say that what's next, but I don't think there is at the minute. I know it's, yeah, it's just like I say, busy year with a bit of traveling, lots of running, lots of traveling, lots of this and that. It's been a crazy beginning of the year, so I'm looking forward to. I would say I'm not even off half term. I've got to travel, so I've got to go away for half term,
right?
And then hopefully in the summer I'm going to get some downtime. And yeah,
very good. Well, I mean, you're clearly doing something that that ignites you and gives you joy, and that's always a wonderful thing to see. And I'm very, very grateful for the time that you've given the show. It's been great to chat to you and learn about your journey and all of the other things that you've kind of had your head in.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been quite good therapy.
That's what everybody says. Nice one. Well, that's good. That's good.
Squeezed all that into 20 odd years, 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, top man, nice one. I'm sure I will see you around at something very soon. Probably the awards, in fact. If you're there, I shall see you there.
Will do. Brilliant.
Thanks, Ian. Cheers. Well, what a blast that was with Ian. His energy, passion and love for hospitality absolutely pours out of him. From RAF kitchens and major sporting events to global aviation catering and mentoring young chefs, it's clear he genuinely cares about both the craft and the people behind it. A huge thank you to Ian for sharing his stories, his insight and his infectious enthusiasm with us all. We'll be back soon with another cracking conversation. Until then, take real good care of yourselves and we'll catch you next time.